Let's clear out winter and clean up the lawn. With Spring Black Friday Savings at the Home Depot. Right now, get the Ryobi One Plus Leaf Blower for just $89 and make your lawn work easier with a powerful 90 miles an hour of clearing power. Plus, you can buy it online and pick it up in store, getting you outside sooner. Get your yard spring ready with the Ryobi One Plus Leaf Blower, now just $89 during Spring Black Friday at the Home Depot. How doers get more done. See store at homedepot.com/delivery for details.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower-than-low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Hello, everybody. Welcome to Circling the Bases, a baseball podcast from NBC Sports Edge. I am Chris Crawford. I host this podcast every Thursday morning, and I bring on some really smart folks from around the baseball industry to talk all things fantasy baseball and a little bit more. Thank you to everybody who is joining us live. If you're watching us on YouTube or Twitch, really appreciate it. Feel free to leave some comments. We'll try our best to get to them, kind of a packed show, but definitely appreciate you guys joining us however you're listening to the show. Let's not dilly-dally. Let's bring in my guest. He's written about fantasy sports for a very long time and talked fantasy sports for a very long time for very highly respected publications. He's currently the executive producer of podcasts at The Athletic. Please welcome my friend, Derek Van Riper. Derek, how are we doing today?
Doing great, Chris. Thanks for having me on.
Yeah, it's an honor. It's the last time I think we talked on a podcast form was when you were producing Keith's show. Now, do you want to kill Keith yet? You can be honest with me. Like, are you sick of him yet? Because I know that if I dealt with him, no, he's pretty great, isn't he?
Yeah, I get him twice a week, and it's pretty easy to work with him. You can throw him any topic, and he can riff on it for quite a while. So he's an easy guy to work with.
Weird humble break. But I talked to him on GChat a while, and I always am like thinking, don't say something stupid, because this is like a really smart guy who can really call you out if you say something stupid. It's really helped my GChat game is what I'll say. And I will really miss that app when that goes away. Kind of leads perfectly into my first question. Since, you know, without calling you old, I was trying to do this with Jim Callis last week to be respectful, but you have been doing this for a long time. How much do you think podcasts have really shaped the fantasy sports scene?
Well, I think they've changed the conversation a little bit. I think, fortunately, we have an outlet to talk about baseball year-round. Several outlets, more than we ever would have imagined, right? And I go back to the SiriusXM Fantasy Sports Radio launch. Fortunately, when I was with RotoWire, they let me be part of the host rotation when the channel was new, and that was over 10 years ago now.
Wow.
But this time of year on that channel, everything's all football, and it kind of becomes all football in July. And I think with podcast growth especially, it's great for the diehard fantasy baseball player to have so many more choices than they had then. Like, and this is not me bashing SiriusXM. They're great. No. There's a ton of great hosts and people there. Absolutely. But I just think we live in such a fun time for a content creator and for a content consumer. You can kind of make anything you want, and there's probably someone out there who will actually listen to it or watch it, which is just pretty amazing.
It's weird because I have to say, I did not see this coming with podcasts, and I should have, because hindsight in 2020, it's such an obvious format to be a great way to digest information. But I got to be honest, like when they first started, I was like, this seems like such a niche thing. Like, who wants to take the time to listen to a bunch of people blather? Like, talk radio, the talk radio is going down the tubes. How can this be a popular thing? And it's just exploded. And I think it's great. Because it's just the perfect way to digest information too. Like, as great as like, please keep reading our articles and all of that stuff. But there's no doubt that it is easier for some people to digest like a ranking or what you think about a prospect or what you think about a fantasy player in that audio format than reading that information, especially in like without being too old man yells at cloud. This generation, you know, it's either visual or audio that are most of this information is being broken down. But man, I didn't see this coming, but it is fascinating to see just how big I think it's gotten over the, especially these last 4 or 5 years.
Yeah, and I think if you go to any sort of live fantasy baseball gathering, I mean, the first pitch Arizona gatherings, which sure. fortunately that's coming back this year,
right?
You see new faces in the room, which mm-hmm. the first few years I went there, you really didn't. And it was great to catch up with old friends and to build those relationships, but to sure. see new people showing up every year, that's kind of a sign of just general growth, which is good for everybody. If you make content, you want new people out there also creating content for everybody. And it's a rising tide that lifts all boats sort of situation, I think, having podcasting explode the way that it has.
Absolutely. And by the way, I will be one of those new faces at First Pitch Arizona this year. I just confirmed my travel. If you're somebody who's listening to the show, please come say hi. I'll be the fat guy. It'll be very easy to find me. Exciting about that. In the second half of the show, we're going to kind of talk about some difficult roster decisions, guys that you can maybe who are owned or rostered in a large number of leagues that you maybe should consider dropping and vice versa. But the Adalberto Mondesi news broke just shortly before we were about to start talking. Two things. One, that he's back in the lineup on Wednesday night. And two, that he's going to be playing third base for the rest of the season. Now, Mondesi has been limited to just 10 games this year. It was an impressive 10 games. He was hitting .361 with 4 homers, only 1 steal, but certainly a guy that has proven that he's among the fleetest of foot and a guy who could steal a lot of bases. So, Derek, Adalberto Mondesi, and I think the decision for third base is interesting for 2022, but let's just talk about in 2021. He is rostered in 85% of Yahoo League, so either people were hanging on or a big number of people were adding as soon as he got to the roster. Do you think he's someone fantasy managers can trust for the rest of the 2021 season?
I actually think he is. It doesn't take a lot for Mondesi to create a lot of value over sure. a small period of time. We've seen right. that in the best months of previous seasons. He went on a tear last September in the shortened season and completely kind of changed the way his overall production looked. I mean, 24 steals in 59 games last year. I swear, like half of them came in September, if I remember correctly. But
yeah,
he probably get you 8 or 10 steals easily in any given month with room for more.
Sure.
We know there's power. Mm-hmm. It's just a matter of health. And yeah. beyond this season, I think it's going to be fascinating to see where he falls in drafts. There's no way his ADP is at the 2-3 turn like it was this season because sure. of the amount of missed time and the fact that this isn't the first time that he's lost a significant portion of a season to injury.
Yeah, that's a great point. And I think the third base thing is really interesting for a couple of reasons. One, I think it's a little bit of an audition for Adalberto Mondesi because they, as many of you know, the Royals do have this young man named Bobby Witt Jr. playing shortstop right now. And so this is can be a little bit of an audition in a couple ways. One, it's a chance to see how he handles third base. I imagine with his arm strength and his range, he's going to be excellent there. But, you know, it is a new position. It is something that prospective general managers will want to see him do. And two, it's really a chance to see if he has the value for if the Royals want to go another way with this thing, if Adalberto Mondesi is somebody who general managers are going to consider for trades because, you know, he is signed to a fairly, the last time I checked, team-friendly contract. But Bobby Witt Jr. is the future there. All due respect to Adalberto Mondesi, Bobby Witt Jr. is as good of a shortstop prospect outside of Wander Franco that I've scouted in the last 4 to 5 years. Do you think that Adalberto Mondesi is a Kansas City Royal in 2022?
Some of the comments that Dayton Moore has made suggesting that they don't necessarily see him as an everyday player are odd
yeah.
because on the
yes.
one hand, you think, okay, so they don't really like him. But if they were going to trade him, they wouldn't say that out loud. They would just bring him back from the injury and play him every day and then find a good deal in the offseason. I think more likely than not, I think he's a Royal next season.
Yeah.
I think the other thing I wonder about with Mondesi, though, how good can a player be with plate discipline like that?
Yeah.
You can get by with the low walk rate and you can sure. get by with the high K rate, but can you really get by with both in the long run? I think that's what's always made him such a polarizing player in fantasy circles and just in general baseball circles.
It absolutely has. And speaking of polarizing player, another player that is coming off the injured list is Denelson Lamet. Now, Denelson Lamet, for those of you who have followed my work for a while, one, I'm sorry. And two, thank you. But three, know that I have been a big fan of Denelson Lamet for a very long time. When I was at Baseball Prospectus, I had to push for this guy to make the top 10 prospect list back in 2016 or 17. I can't remember what year it is. Time is just an illusion. But Lamet is coming back. When he's healthy, shows unbelievable stuff. He looks like he's going to be used in a more of a relief role, maybe some multi-inning things, but certainly has the ability to miss bats. Struck out actually three today in his one appearance, one inning, excuse me. Denelson Lamet, is he someone that fantasy managers should be looking to add down the stretch?
I think because of the way the workload is going to be structured and because he's probably not finishing out games, he doesn't fit particularly well. I mean, unless they were going to purposefully throw a short reliever in front of him, go with the opener strategy and then let him go two or three, in that case, I'd be a little more excited. But if they're just going to use him as a glue guy and they're going to say, well, Paddock only went four today, so here comes Lamet for two or three.
Right.
It's you could still get a win that way, of course. It just seems like it's going to be more erratic. And I think that makes it a lot more challenging to choose when to use him, like in a weekly league especially. So if we're talking like a 15-team league or something deeper, maybe as your last pitcher. But I think in your more typical 10 and 12-team leagues especially, I think Lamet's one of those guys that we sort of have to wait until next year to get excited about again.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think that actually is a pretty good question since we talked about Modesty in 2022. Like Denelson Lamet, like what we saw in 2020 was stuff that competes with any pitcher in baseball. But it's also, if you listen to any injury expert, and I'll probably just skip my opinion on most injury experts. There are some people who know what the heck they're talking about. But if you listen to any type of doctor stuff that you're talking about with his delivery and with his arm history, a very, very, very precarious situation. What type of fantasy expectations do you think people should have for Lamet in 2022 even?
So yeah, I'm definitely not an injury expert, but he would carry what I would call a significantly elevated injury risk. I think it's okay to make that statement.
100%.
I trust the skills when he's healthy, but when he's healthy is in all caps right here.
Yeah.
I would say if I'm projecting a typical pitcher, a less risky pitcher to get 180 plus innings, I'm comfortable projecting Lamet for about 100. So he's going to be at the lower end of what I would even project for someone who will think of as a rotation candidate. There have been good pitchers in the past who I would have projected like that. And then it just comes down to price. I mean, he's got to fall probably outside at least the top 150 overall for that to be worth the risk, because you can't rely on him as one of your first three or four starting pitchers with an expected innings output in the low 100 range. That's just not enough. And I think because it's recurring arm trouble, especially, this isn't like Rich Hill's blister problems and things like that, where you can kind of say, yeah, there's more risk than usual, but you can probably figure it out. Like, this seems like it ends, unfortunately, with another surgery for Lamet.
Yeah, this is, and I hope I'm wrong. It's kind of like, for those who listened yesterday, I talked about Giancarlo Stanton's injury history, and I hope Giancarlo Stanton ends up breaking Cal Ripken's game played record in a row. It's not going to happen, but I hate talking about it because I don't want this to happen. Obvious point is obvious, but just in case somebody yells at me, but he's a really risky guy. And I think if you are drafting Lamet, and you're even if you're adding him, you got to pair him with some safety. Like, you have to have that guy who's going, and there's not a lot of these guys anymore, the six inning, three run guys. That's just not the way baseball is, but you have to be prepared to pair him with some safety. We got a question here that I think is pretty interesting. Not that I don't think all of your questions are interesting, thankfully. DJ Storm asks, currently have Cronenworth at first base. Would Dahlbeck be a better move? I'll let you answer that one first, sir.
I just don't like the Bobby Dahlbeck profile. When it's going good, you feel like you have to roster him and you have to play him. And when it's not going well, you wonder why you picked him up in the first place. And that's going to happen. When you run a K rate as high as what Dahlbeck has, you're going to have these nasty slumps. Sure. The power's legit. It was legit from day one when he showed up.
Yeah.
Cronenworth is such a polar opposite sort of player. Mm-hmm. If talking about floor versus ceiling, I think Cronenworth is in a much better overall situation. Love having that extra flexibility with the multiple positions too. So I would actually still stick with Cronenworth here and let Dahlbeck go somewhere else.
Yeah, I think I would do the same. It's it's more a compliment to Cronenworth than an insult to Dalbec. But all of your concerns are the concerns that I've had since he was at Arizona, when I honestly thought that his best position was going to be pitcher when he was throwing 97 off the mound. Certainly become a much better pure hitter than I expected. Never a question of the power. One of the most impressive batting practices that I've seen when he was at the University of Arizona. But Cronenworth is just a much better, especially if we're talking about a 5x5 category. Like, he's not a dink and duck hitter. He will provide some pop for you. He will hit for some average. I like that Padres lineup still, even though, boy, what a disaster this has been for San Diego. I'm glad that I don't have the ability to bet here in Washington State, because if I could have bet on like three NL West teams making the postseason, I may have emptied my 401k on it just because it seemed like such a lock. But yeah, I do like Cronenworth a little bit better, but I think you can justify it. Like, if you're really chasing that homer category, go with Dalbec. Like, he can really help you in that. The power is always going to be legit, but there's that chance that, like, he's going to give you a 2-week streak of going 2 for 36. It's I just prefer the high floor in that situation.
Yeah, the playing time can fluctuate quickly with a guy like Dalbec. They can just mix and match a little more. I mean, he's a righty with a guy, Travis Shaw, one of the lefties that they can mix and match with. So he can fall into the small side of a platoon in the blink of an eye, really. If he slumps for a week, all of a sudden he's playing less.
Yeah, that's a great point. Before we get into the second half of our show, special offer for our listeners, use promo code BASES10 for 10% off any premium subscription for NBC Sports Edge Plus. You can use it monthly, you can use it annually, and you can use it for any tier. The best part here is it's not only do you get access to the baseball season tools, which are awesome and can really help you over this final month, but your subscription also covers the NBA, Save Our Sonics, NHL, the Kraken are winning the Stanley Cup this year, and NFL, if anyone ever says anything bad about Russell Wilson, I will find you. So it's a great value, and it can help you if you play baseball or if you have your hand in all sports. So remember, it's promo code BASES10, and you can go to NBCSportsEdge.com/premium to get started. Derek, have you done most of your fantasy football drafts now, or do you got a few coming up?
I've got one more with my friends from way back in the day, the kids I grew up going to elementary school with. We have a league together. That's coming up next week. So that's my last one.
Awesome. So that's a great question that I like to ask the fantasy folks. Would you rather win the high profile one against the fantasy experts, or would you rather win the one with your friends from school?
I would rather win the high profile league. and it's not, it's probably because there's more at stake in those leagues. I mean, Tout Wars and Labor, of course, no money at stake there.
Right.
But if we're talking like NFBC versus a league with my friends, like I like beating my friends too, but yeah, I'd rather win at the absolute highest level.
Yeah. This basically asks the question of how capitalist are you? No, it is one that I kind of struggle with myself, because it is putting yourself up against those experts who obviously know what they're talking about. And let's be honest, there's a lot of luck involved in fantasy sports. So, like winning against your friends, especially the ones who are just casual fantasy players, it's fun. You know, there's a lot to take from it. I play in the Olympia Cup. We're going in, I believe, our 12th season. I've won three and finished last a lot too, because I kind of in dynasty leagues like to sell out for that championship. Flags fly forever. Mm-hmm. But it is, it's a lot of fun to win either way. But yeah, definitely check out NBCSportsEdge.com/premium, because the work that Patrick Doherty and John Daigle and those guys do is outstanding.
Something big is cooking during Spring Black Friday at the Home Depot with the Weber Jumbo Joe Premium Charcoal Grill. We're talking almost 2 feet across big. That's 13 burgers at once big. Right now, get the Weber Jumbo Joe Premium Charcoal Grill for just $99.98 at the Home Depot, and bring that classic charcoal experience to your cookout. Buy it online and pick it up in store to get to grilling sooner. Go big during Spring Black Friday with the Weber Jumbo Joe Premium Charcoal Grill, now just $99.98 at the Home Depot. How doers get more done. Order select in-stock items by 4 p.m. subject to availability.
Reese's Peanut Butter Cups are the greatest, but let me play devil's advocate here. Let's see. So, no, that's a good thing. That's definitely not a problem. Reese's, you did it. You stumped this charming devil.
Hear that? It's the call of the Crave. And when the Crave calls, you know what to do. Try the $5 Bacon Bundle. because the only thing better than a White Castle slider is a White Castle slider topped with crispy hickory smoked bacon. So pick any two of either the bacon cheese slider, 1921 bacon cheese slider, or chicken bacon ranch slider, and also get a small fry for just $5 with the $5 bacon bundle. White Castle. Follow your crave.
We are in September. Today is, if you're live, today is the first day. If you're listening the day after, you know how days of the month work. I assume most of you went to kindergarten. But it is a very tough time because roster decisions are hard at this point, at least for me. I really struggle with when I can finally start dropping some folks and when I just have to add some folks. So I thought we'd go over some players that have been either struggling, that have been rostered in that 60 to 70% range, a couple a little bit higher. And then some players who have been flourishing, who have are rostered in 50% and lower. So I thought I would ask Derek for some help with these roster decisions. And I'll start with Tyler O'Neill. Now, Tyler O'Neill, who was to say he was hot to begin his time back after coming off the injured list, is the understatement of understatements. Kind of flailing a little bit lately. Tyler O'Neill, is he someone that you can at least justify dropping for the rest of 2021?
I think you could, because I think right now the batting average is probably 30 to 40 points above the projection, depending on which projections you use.
Sure.
But he gives you power. He gives you speed. He really doesn't have anyone pushing him for playing time right now.
That's
a good
point.
There's more good than bad in the O'Neill profile. There's if batting average is a big category for me, if it's really clustered together where I can get two or three standings points by doing better in that category, I could see justifying dropping O'Neill in those circumstances. But more often than not, I think he sticks on my roster at this point.
Yeah, I think that's fair. We're starting with, I think, the toughest one, because that 273 average is a, let's just face it, it's a bit of a mirage. Like there it was so based on just this red hot start. But, you know, especially if you're playing an on-base percentage league, he's not going to give you a lot of walks. But those steals are something that you have to be cognizant of. The power is legit. I mean, this guy is built like a bodybuilder, because that's what his family basically trained to do for basically their entire lives. I think it's a really tough one, but I do think you can justify it, especially because of the outfield position. There, you can find guys who can help you in different categories. But I think even the fact that we're kind of talking about that, it's a conversation, kind of shows you how much you slowed down, because that those first couple of weeks off the injured list, I were like Vladimir Guerrero with speed.
Yeah, that was fun while it lasted.
Yeah, it really was. Next up, not somebody you would describe as Vladimir Guerrero with speed, is Eugenio Suarez. Suarez is certainly still providing some pop, but has really struggled for average again. And this is a continuation from his 2020 season, especially with where the third base position, which isn't quite as loaded as it looked to be at the beginning of the season. But is this someone you're looking to drop in 2021 for these final 3 weeks?
Yeah, I think there's a little more here to consider. I mean, we've got a long track record now of Suarez just not being the guy that he was for the better part of four seasons. I mean, from 2016 to 2019, he was a middle of the order masher in Cincinnati. The 2019 numbers, I mean, those were just absurd. And I think a lot of that came in the second half of that season, too. I think he was a slow starter that year, if my memory is holding up. Who does Suarez remind you of? Like, is this like a Dan Uggla sort of fall off? Him? Like, this is brutal.
Yeah, it's pretty bad. I it's kind of a weird one, but I'm kind of reminded a little bit of Dean Palmer too. Like that, and that's aging me a little bit, but like, you know, this is a skill set. Like the power is legit. He's probably going to finish the year with 30 homers for, I believe, the fourth time in 5 years. And he certainly would have gotten to 30 homers if we would have played enough games. But like, this is a tough spot to be in, like for next year, because I think I'm just avoiding you for next year, especially Eugenio Suarez in particular, because you can't roster somebody even with 40 homer potential. It's very hard to justify rostering somebody who over the last 2 years, and I'm using my good friend Baseball Reference to tell me that over the last 2 years, he has a batting average of 179. That's not a small sample anymore. That's 718 plate appearances. And, you know, as nice as the power is, he doesn't provide anything with stolen bases. I think one thing that's kind of interesting is I believe he will be eligible for shortstop in the majority of leagues next year. So that's something to consider. But man, yeah, I'm glad you, it's interesting that you brought up the fall from grace, because like in 2019, I think we were talking about this guy being an upper echelon third baseman.
Yeah, I think he was easily like a consensus top 50 player going right into 2020. And now he might not be a top 250 guy going into 2022. Like, that's a crazy fall.
Yeah, that's a massive fall. A guy who has fallen a little bit, not quite as precipitously as Eugenio Suarez, and it's basically mostly been the fall over the last couple of weeks. Taiwan Walker. Is Taiwan Walker someone that needs to be a must start over these last four or so weeks?
I've got him in a couple of leagues, and I haven't just been locking him in every single week. He's still in the group of pitchers that I want to see who he's facing. He's a matchup dependent starter for me, and I've been wrong about him a couple of times. He's come up big in spots where I didn't have the confidence to actually let him pitch. I think this is probably still it's a start by start situation, but the short list of teams that he'll face that I wouldn't use him against, I mean, geez, who would I not pitch him against? I wouldn't pitch him in Colorado if he had to go back there. In division, though, are we looking at Atlanta's offense and saying, yeah, you can't throw Taiwan Walker against them? Like, probably not. Like, they're kind of like league average, I would guess, without Acuna and with some of the guys they added. So I don't really see a lot of difficult spots. At Philly, because of the park, maybe I would avoid Walker. Sure. But I think he's in more often than he's out the rest of the way, because we're talking now over 130 innings this season, the 1.16 whip, sub-4 ERA, plenty of Ks. So I don't know why August was such a tricky month for me with Taiwan Walker, but I think he's really kind of pushed himself back into that circle of trust where you don't have to worry about most of the matchups at this point.
Right. And it's worth pointing out that his next scheduled start, I believe, is against the Nationals on September 5th, which is a very friendly matchup outside of that Juan Soto guy, who's apparently pretty good. But yeah, I think he's an interesting case. I will say this. I do have a little bit of a worry that this is his first full season in a very long time. And I do think I've seen a couple of starts that have suggested that maybe not quite ready to handle that 160 inning limit, or 160 innings. Everyone knows what I'm trying to say. I'm just not saying it very well, but yeah, I think Walker is a guy that if he's on your roster and you see a streaming option that you really, really like, I think you can go after that guy. But I might do it after that start against the Nationals, because that's a very friendly matchup. Should be able to get some strikeouts in that start. But like, it's weird. He is a pitcher that, even going back to the prospect days, that I've just struggled to trust. And I've seen enough, like his last start, allowing three runs over 4 2/3 innings against the Marlins on Tuesday. Like, that's a pretty friendly matchup too. That was concerning. And I try not to be too much of a prisoner of the moment type thing, but it's just really hard for me sometimes to trust Taiwan Walker.
Yeah. I definitely understand where you're coming from, because we've seen some legitimate skills related issues from him earlier in his career. It does seem like he's really ironed some of those concerns out. Like, I trust them control wise a bit more now than I did 3 and 4 years ago. So that's a step forward. And you know, the home run rate's not off the charts bad. We saw one really bad home run rate season in Seattle in 2016. So these are decent skills, just kind of a solid, like, mid fantasy rotation sort of guy at this point.
Absolutely. Let's end on the positive note. Let's talk about some guys who we could maybe be adding to our roster. And the first one I want to talk about is Nathaniel Lowe, who has been, I mean, he started off, we talked about some hot starts. Sensational, especially with RBI, and obviously you can't project RBI very well in anything. It's a kind of a silly stat to base anything on, but he's had a solid rookie season. It appears to be really picking things up as of late. Is he someone you're looking to add to your roster over this final month?
Yeah, I'm trying to be careful with Lowe. I had high expectations for him back in his Tampa Bay days. And that fast start made me think, I was right. The Rays were wrong. And the last 3 months have kind of pointed to the Rays probably making the right call. And I realize they're a team that has a roster crunch. And if they trade a player away, it doesn't mean the player's no good. It just means they don't necessarily have a way of managing that player within the way they want to run the roster as a whole. I think he's pretty matchup dependent, right? This is a guy that even if he plays against lefties, I don't necessarily want those matchups. I think this week he had six games where three were against lefties. Looking ahead to next week, two of six are against lefties. So not crazy about the schedule. I get excited if we see a run of six or seven games where he's getting all righties. So I think you stream him in a spot like that. But these next couple of weeks, I don't think he's necessarily a must roster player.
Totally fair. It's been interesting to see because I'm just looking at these splits, April, March, and, you know, we're judging batting average here, and we're also judging fairly small sample sizes. But by month, his batting averages are 277, 220, 277, 243, 286. So it's really been a very Brett Saberhagen-esque year for Nathaniel Lowe. And that's not a huge surprise for a rookie, like getting his very first taste of Major League action. I've been really encouraged by what I've seen from him over, though, these last few weeks. I think the one concern, of course, is the positional stuff. First base, you can find a lot of these guys, but I do think he's worth consideration. Another guy I think is worth consideration is Brady Singer. Brady Singer, a pitcher for the Royals who has been excellent over his last three starts. Are you buying into Brady Singer for the final portion of the year?
I'm not sure I'm even on board with the Royals' like general pitching development. It seems like they've piled up a lot of pitching talent, but haven't turned that talent into quality big league arms just yet.
Right.
It's not fair to just categorically dismiss everybody, but I think that always is kind of lingering in my mind. Like, how much do I really want to trust Brady Singer? The schedule is the thing that surprises me. Like, if you said, oh, he's good over his last three starts, I would have said, oh, he could probably face the Tigers and the Twins and the Tigers again. But he caught Houston twice during that span.
Yeah.
And he went five plus against them both times. Like, that's encouraging. I realize this isn't necessarily the same Astros lineup that we saw earlier this season, but they're still really good. That's still a matchup that we would have avoided.
Yeah.
So I would say he's below Walker for sure. Like, if you're looking at Walker versus Brady Singer and you had to start them the rest of the way because you didn't have any other options, I'd much rather play someone like Taiwan Walker. But I do think Singer's still in the group of lower end streamable options that we want to look at in some matchups. Maybe most of his home starts are safe at this point. Like, I don't know if I'd throw him against the White Sox in Kansas City, but everybody else in that division, of course, I would stream him in those spots.
That's very fair. That's one of the reasons why I'm high on Singer is because, yes, he does face the White Sox in his next start, actually, which is a no-go for me. I'm just avoiding the White Sox whenever I can, unless I have an upper echelon pitcher. But things get kind of friendly from there. He does have a chance to make a start against the Orioles, which, I mean, is the streaming mecca right now if you get a chance to pitch both against those guys. But again, it's another thing with me, a little bit of the eye test too, because I've had a chance to watch those last three starts, even against the Mariners, which are, you know, the luckiest team to ever luck. But he pitched very well against them, six innings of one run baseball. It's kind of interesting because his first two starts before that were kind of disasters, actually, one of them against the Orioles and another against the Yankees, which is forgivable. But I'm a Singer fan. I thought he was a bit of an overrated prospect coming out of the draft because I was concerned about a third pitch. But I do think he misses bats, but definitely a guy that I think needs to be more stream consideration than somebody that you're locking in. And then the final one is a weird one. It's somebody that I didn't think I would be talking about in fantasy baseball ever. Nicky Lopez. And Nicky Lopez has been absolutely scorching the baseball, at least in terms of average, and stealing a ton of bases. Are you buying in to the Nicky Lopez hype trade?
I think he's exactly the kind of player that I avoid in draft season, but I end up picking up in September because of categorical needs. I mean, it's so hard to find steals on the wire. He doesn't really take any days off. The fact that he won't hurt you in batting average is nice. If you're fine in the power categories, I think you can absolutely justify this. He's 18 for 18 as a base stealer.
Yeah.
Where did this come from? Like, he didn't have these like perfect success rates anywhere in the minors. Like, the longer I play this game, Chris, the more I think that minor league stolen base numbers mean absolutely nothing.
Nothing. Yeah.
They're worthless.
They're pretty worthless unless you're getting that guy who steals like the 80 to like 70 to 80 stolen bases then, or even like a 50 stolen base guy. But like, I think we've even seen this a little bit with like Kyle Tucker, who's stolen 12 bases, not a terrible number, but he was a guy that, you know, I knew that this stolen base thing was not going to be that 30 stolen base pace that he was doing in the minors. He just doesn't have the speed for it and doesn't run enough. I'm glad you brought this up because I want to talk about Zach Veen just for a second. Zach Veen is putting up a tremendous amount of steals in his level. I want everyone to remember that Zach Veen has about a little bit above average speed, but is playing in the league where they have rules right now that have made the stolen base very, very friendly. So just something to keep in mind for dynasty managers who are rostering Zach Veen. But back to Nicky Lopez, how we got from Nicky Lopez to Zach Veen is absolutely your fault, Derek. But yeah, I think he's absolutely worth a roster spot. Like, I'm glad you brought up the stolen base thing too, because I recorded a video on him not too long ago. He was 0 for 5 in 2020. He literally went from going 0 for 5 to going 18 for 18. Certainly not a question about his wheels, but it's clearly obviously getting better jumps. That's the understatement of understatement. But to steal bases, you got to get on base. And he is just like, I'm looking at his game log right here. He had 4 straight 3-hit games. And some of this, some BABIP luck. But Nicky Lopez was a guy who was getting average to above average hit grades. I think he's really interesting. I would think you would agree with me on this, a guy that you're rostering for the next 3 weeks, but probably not on your fantasy radar for 2022.
Yeah, you're really hoping to not be relying on Nicky Lopez in the future because he's basically a two-category player.
Right.
Maybe he gets to 3 if the OBP stays up, which it could. He's drawing enough walks this year and last year to think that he really possesses that skill.
Sure.
But is he going to hit leadoff there? I mean, with all the pieces they have currently there, plus Witt on the way, I wouldn't bank on that. So I think Nicky Lopez is fine. He's a perfect glue guy if you're looking for speed down the stretch. And I guess the last question I have for you related to Lopez is, isn't this kind of what we expected Nick Madrigal to be? I think Madrigal probably has a better hit tool than most people's grades,
sure.
But I think this is the type of fantasy profile that you're going to get from Nick Madrigal most years too.
That is a great point. And I think that is why Nick Madrigal is one of the most volatile fantasy players or prospects I think I've ever scouted, because he basically has to max out in the hit tool for him to be worth where you're probably drafting him or turn down trades for. And, you know, does he have a swing that suggests he could hit 330, 340 some years? Absolutely. Does he have a swing that suggests he could have a similar slugging percentage in those years as too? Yeah. So it's really going to be depending on whether or not the Cubs are going to let him run enough to justify being that 2-3 category. I think the one nice thing there is I do think that he will hit at the top of the lineup there. So I do think he has a chance to score a lot of runs. My question now is, do the Cubs have anybody who's going to be able to drive him in for the next couple of years? Because that lineup, like Brandon Davis, I think has a chance to be a superstar someday, but we're talking about another couple of years before he reaches that level. I don't see a lot of run producing type of players there. So, man, I did not think we would be talking about Nick Madrigal. That's why you're the best in the business, Derek. And I did not think we'd be ending a show with Nicky Lopez and Nick Madrigal. But here we are. Derek, please promote everything and anything you're doing except for your Twitter account, because I'm going to do that at the end.
All right, that sounds good. The podcast I'm a part of, Rates and Barrels with Eno Saris, the Athletic Fantasy Baseball podcast, and
it's awesome.
Fantasy Baseball in 15, all those shows, of course, running through the end of the month and even into the offseason. In the case of Rates and Barrels, we'll even do a few Under the Radars, which is part of the Athletic Fantasy Baseball podcast throughout the offseason, too, since we've got kind of a keeper and dynasty lean on that show. So it's always fun to keep going and kind of always look ahead at the next season. That's part of, like, I've got 1 foot in for this season still, and I'm still trying to win titles this year. But I know a lot of people out there aren't playing for titles right now. Yeah. I've been in that position before, so I want to try and start laying the groundwork for 2022.
Awesome. It's great stuff. You know, we're more, even though we're technically competitors, I think you guys do an outstanding job, and there's plenty of room for all of us. Thank you again, Derek, for taking part. Stay tuned tomorrow. Drew and DJs, they're going to try to match the magic of the show live, 9 Eastern. Good luck. You can follow Derek at Derek Van Riper, DerekVanRiper. Did I get that right?
Yep.
Sweet. And you can follow me at Crawford_MILB. Thanks again for listening or joining us live. If you have a chance to rate the show, I've heard 5 stars is pretty nice. I've also heard that it's legally the only grade that you can give a podcast, so don't break the law. Thanks again, and we will see you guys soon.
Something big is cooking during Spring Black Friday at the Home Depot with the Weber Jumbo Joe Premium Charcoal Grill. We're talking almost 2 feet across big. That's 13 burgers at once big. Right now, get the Weber Jumbo Joe Premium Charcoal Grill for just $99.98 at the Home Depot and bring that classic charcoal experience to your cookout. Buy it online and pick it up in-store to get to grilling sooner. Go big during Spring Black Friday with the Weber Jumbo Joe Premium Charcoal Grill, now just $99.98 at the Home Depot. How doers get more done. Order select in-stock items by 4 p.m. subject to availability.
Time for a quick break to talk about McDonald's. Mornings are for mixing and matching at McDonald's. For just $3, mix and match two of your favorite breakfast items, including a sausage McMuffin, sausage biscuit, sausage burrito, and hash browns. Make it even better with a delicious medium iced coffee. With McDonald's mix and match, you can't go wrong. Price and participation may vary. Cannot be combined with any other offer or combo meal. Single item at regular price.